Welcome to the first webinar in the Fall 2017 Journal Club Series. My name is Kayla Jenkins, and I'm the Communications Assistant at the Society for Nutrition, Education, and Behavior. I'm so glad you all could join us for our presentation today. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you will see a Handouts tab, and here's where you will find the slides for today. Feel free to download them and take notes as you follow along with today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type your questions in the question box at any time throughout the presentation so that we can then moderate them to our presenters. When the webinar ends, you will be prompted to complete a short survey, and we do appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future journal clubs. And lastly, watch for an email to be sent by the end of the day on Wednesday. That'll include a link to the recording for this session, the slides, the CEU certificate that you will be earning for your attendance today as well. So our moderator today is Rachel Paul. She's doctoral fellow at the Columbia University.
Great, thank you so much. So I'm going to introduce our speakers today. Dr. Bangia worked as a dietitian and nutrition professional in India and moved to the United States to get her PhD in nutrition education research from Rutgers University. She has international experience in public health research and project management in nonprofit organizations, academia institutions, hospitals, and the food industry. She currently works with Public Health Solutions as a program evaluation manager for their Neighborhood WIC program. Dr. Deborah Palmer Keenan, a past president of SNEB, is a nutrition specialist for Rutgers Cooperative Extension and a faculty member at Rutgers Department of Nutritional Sciences. Dr. Keenan brings a unique set of skills to the field of nutrition education. She holds two Masters of Education degrees, one in community health promotion and the other in nutrition education, both from the University of Cincinnati. She also holds a doctoral degree in nutrition education from Penn State. In her role as extension specialist, Dr. Palmer Keenan works on urban limited resource community nutrition issues, has a research and extension program in community nutrition, which involves development, implementation, and evaluation of nutrition education programs. She provides statewide leadership for the Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program, or FNEP. She develops and tests research methods that are appropriate for examining community nutrition issues. Dr. Keenan's primary research area surrounds issues related to the effective delivery and evaluation of nutrition education for limited resource urban audiences. I will now hand it over to our presenters.
Hi, this is Dr. Deborah Palmer Keenan. I'm feel honored to be at the first Journal Club meeting for this year, and I'm really excited to present to you this presentation, A Point of Purchase Intervention Using Grocery Store Podcasts About Omega-3s, which was just recently published in JNEB. The way we're going to do the presentation is first I'm going to show you a few slides and talk a bit about the background, a little bit about omega-3s in case you're not familiar with all of their virtues, as well as what we did as a pilot, which is actually published in the journal in 2014, but led up to this work. And then Deepak is going to take over and tell you what happened in this particular project that was recently published, and then I'll come back and talk to you a little bit at the end about what we think the implications are. So basically, and my computer does not seem to be forwarding these slides right now. Does somebody else have control? There we go. Omega-3s are essential fatty acids. Probably everybody learned that in school. We concern ourselves mostly with ALA, EPA, and DHA because we know that all three of these are actually involved in heart health. Okay, I seem to have lost control, so if somebody can move that forward. Mm-hmm. The EPA and DHA have been found to be effective in reducing elevated triglycerides. In fact, the omega-3s, EPA, and DHA are one of the only nutrients that have been approved as a drug for this purpose. Well, they're the only ones that have been approved as a drug, but it turns out that the drug is used to reduce elevated triglycerides. They also can reduce inflammation, and they play a role in pregnancy and lactation, as well as vision. And we suspect that they have played a positive role in reducing polycystic ovarian syndrome, as well as certain cancers and mental conditions and disorders. There's been a lot of recent research with regard to their role in dementia and reducing risk for dementia. There is also a lot of publicity about this particular nutrient, and more so than a lot of others. In the last 5-10 years, we've seen articles all over the place that, of course, the public sees in newspapers and TV ads. Some were actually saying that it made children smarter if you ate omega-3s when you were pregnant and or you fed it to them in baby food, which you'll see here. There's other articles like this one in the bottom left-hand corner that talk about particular omega-3s that come from particular sources, from particular fish, being more virtuous than others. There's things about chia, which, by the way, is not EPA and DHA, it's ALA, and that has been not found to have all of these other extraordinary potential output or outcomes. And then you've got your fish oils and the brain power all here, and people are confused about this nutrient. There aren't a lot of nutrients that we talk about, but this is one of them because there's just been so much information. And I've got another slide here that talks about kind of the issues. Again, I can't forward it, so someone will have to do that for me. This is a problem in the media. They fail to distinguish between the different kinds of M3 fats, so they don't talk about the difference between ALA, EPA, and DHA. This is really common. You'll see newspaper or magazine articles all the time if you read O Magazine or Prevention Magazine, and they talk about omega-3s as if they're all the same, which they aren't. And they also tend to overstate the significance of preliminary findings. I mean, we do believe that they can be very, very good for you, but on the other hand, you know, the minute somebody finds something, a newspaper article comes out, and it hasn't necessarily been verified scientifically. The other thing that confuses consumers, or we believe confuses them, is the fact that there are so many foods in the market that are rich in omega-3s that are now touting that. And again, it's the same kind of problems that you see in the magazine articles. They're not differentiating between the actual source of omega-3s that are being put into these foods. So for instance, you see peanut butter is one of the foods that's fortified with omega-3s. Well, some peanut butters are fortified with fish oil, which means they would be high in EPA and DHA, but others are fortified with plant-based products, which are those high in ALA, which basically that is the difference, by the way. ALA is found to be in many plant products, and among them would be the oils like soy that you find in so many products like salad dressings, all kinds of things. And now they're touting their ability to increase omega-3s and suggesting that perhaps that's going to affect health in the ways that EPA and DHA do. Same thing with milk. Some of the milk is fortified with DHA and EPA, but others are fortified with ALA. So for a consumer, this, again, they seem fortified in omega-3s. They've been reading articles about how it might help reduce dementia or reduce risk for ADHD or reduce risk for polycystic ovarian syndrome. And they think, oh, gosh, I should eat more of this pasta that has omega-3s. But then again, most of the pasta is just fortified with ALA. So we wanted to do something about that to try to clarify for people what they can do and how to tell the different foods apart, which ones are actually going to help them, which ones aren't, which are a waste of their money. Now, we thought the podcast might be a really good way to do this. They haven't really been used, to the best of our knowledge, at point of purchase marketing, but we know that people are carrying their cell phones into the grocery store and using them for just about anything you can imagine, from budgeting to finding coupons. So it isn't a big leap for them to go ahead and download a podcast or a series of podcasts onto their phones or their MP3, MP4 players and to actually listen to them while they're shopping, or at least we didn't think it would be too big of a leap for them. And we also have a relationship with iTunes for podcasts here at Rutgers, and I know a lot of people do. Ours is actually called Rutgers on iTunes, and the podcasts are available there as well as at the Extension website if you're wanting to go to it. Again, if somebody can forward that for me. So on our pilot, we put together a podcast that had an introduction, told people about omega-3s, what they are, why they're important to their diets, which foods are rich in omega-3s, how to read the labels and look for them. And again, a lot of times reading the labels means reading the ingredient list. And where each food could be found in the grocery store, what aisles would be those foods where you would find most of the omega-3s. Of course, fish are the real winners there, but we also have some other foods in the dairy aisle in different places. The pilot questions that we had when we did the podcast were, well, of course, is this a viable method for people to use in order to receive nutrition information while they shop? Is it effective? Does it change what they do? Do they find it to be acceptable, or did they think it was too problematic to actually use it in the grocery store? And was it a viable means of presenting point of purchase nutrition education? And again, this paper for the pilot was published in 2014. What we did was we asked people if they would be interested in learning more about omega-3 rich foods. And if they said yes, we did a brief pretest with them. We had them use the podcast during their shopping trip. Now, we actually provided the MP3 players. They didn't have to download it. And we showed them how to use the MP3 player. So it wasn't a phone. It was an actual MP3 player. And then after they got done shopping and listening to the player while they shopped, they completed a post-test and received $10 for their participation. And then we asked them if there were any changes they would make, like to see made to the podcast, among the other questions that we had. We did this at a ShopRite store that was in a middle to upper class, upper middle class neighborhood between January and March of 2011. And we only did it with English-speaking adults because we only have the podcast available in English right now. Basically, it was intercept interviews. We just stopped people as they were walking into the grocery store. As an aside, we find that stopping people that have small children does not usually work, so that would be something we'd want to call into question later. But a lot of people were there shopping on their own and were more than willing to listen to it. We found that because of the podcast, 29% of the people that we talked to purchased one or more omega-3 rich foods, and 79%, in other words, pretty much the rest of them, indicated that in the future they would do it. They had come in with a grocery list already prepared, so they didn't deviate from it. One of the things they said was that we had pauses that were boring. We were trying to leave pauses for them to do different things, but they were apparently too long. They also indicated that they wanted us to separate tracks by the aisle or the food type. Originally, we just had one long podcast, and they listened to it. We had done it in the order of the store, but that in and of itself was kind of problematic. We had checked out what the aisles were, and then we talked about the aisles in that order, but later realized, of course, all stores are not laid out in the same way. So not only was this a good recommendation from the people who were doing the pilot, but also it just made logistical sense if we were going to use it in the different stores. They wanted a female narrator. That was kind of interesting. I originally did this with a group of graduate students who was taking my community nutrition course, and different students had participated in it, but the one who actually narrated it was a male, and for whatever reason, a lot of the people wanted a female narrator. And they also wanted the volume to come up. We thought we had the volume in good stead, but this is something to pay heed to if you're doing anything in a busy place like a grocery store. There's a lot of ambient noise, and it's really important to make sure the volume is louder than you would necessarily have it when you were sitting at home listening to something. And they wanted the recommendations to be kept simple and practical. We already had that to a degree, but later we went back and we made it as practical as possible by especially going in and telling people when we thought they should and should not spend their money on it for fortified foods. And then the other thing was everybody thought olive oil was a good source of omega-3s. Olive oil just being pushed in the media and everywhere else from us too as being an incredibly healthy oil. Everybody just made that assumption, and we had never mentioned that in the podcast, but people thought it after they listened to the podcast, even though we never said it. So we ended up changing the podcast later to talk about olive oil and to say it was very healthy, but then to kind of reiterate that it actually was not a good source of omega-3s. So if people were relying on that, you know, oh, I get plenty of omega-3s, I use olive oil, we needed to let them know that wasn't the case. So here's where things got really exciting. I'm going to turn this over to Deepika in a second, but I want to mention, so just to clarify on using multiple podcasts, originally it just was like one podcast. Now, after we got the comments from people, we took it, and if you can kind of think of the Omega 3 podcasts as an album called Omega 3 Podcasts, and then the songs being different aisles. So it would be like if you downloaded a, you know, any kind of album onto your phone, and then the first song was Introduction, the second song was Pasta, the third song was Cereal, and that way when you got to that aisle, you could turn it on, and we didn't have these long pauses to give you time to walk to another aisle. You could just control it as you went. So I'm going to turn it over to Deepika right now, and she can tell you about what happened when we did the larger study.
Thank you, Dr. Palmer, and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having us. So here now I'm going to talk about the podcast intervention where we, as Dr. Palmer mentioned, we developed a podcast that was like a song album. So if you downloaded an entire album, these were the different songs on it. So if you downloaded our Omega 3 podcast album, we had the Introduction, Pasta, Cereal, Peanut Butter, Nuts, Oils, Fish, Dairy Foods, Fish, canned fish and fish were separate just because in the grocery store they are stocked in separate aisles for obvious reasons, because fish has to be refrigerated and canned food was usually canned fish was usually in the canned food aisle. So for this intervention, we did it at 20 grocery stores across New Jersey. New Jersey has, I think, 19 counties. We didn't do it in all counties, but we did it in 14 out of the 19 counties. We did intercept interviews with English-speaking adults only. This podcast was only developed in English, and it was a repeated measures design. This was done in February 2013. So similar to the pilot, participants were asked if they were interested to learn more about omega-3 rich foods. If they said yes, they were invited to participate in a brief pretest. They were asked to use the podcast during their shopping trip. We provided them an MP3 player. This was a very old-fashioned MP3 player. It was not connected to the internet. We had pre-downloaded the podcast on it, and that was the only thing that was on the MP3 player. There was nothing else on it. They were asked, after they shopped, they were asked to complete a post-test when they came back to hand over the MP3 player to us. We usually ask them to do it right before they check out because we were inside the store, and so once they check out, they had the exit was, it would lead them to outside the store. So right before they checked out, they came, completed a post-test, and they showed us their grocery carts to see what foods they had or they were intending to purchase. At that time, we gave them a $20 compensation. The $20 was a gift card to that grocery store, so they could have used that $20 at that current shopping trip itself. So it was right away that they got the money and they could use it at the grocery store. In the post-test, we asked shoppers to provide, if they were willing to provide us their loyalty card numbers. That is what we used to conduct the secondary data analysis, so that it was very exciting where we got their loyalty card numbers, and with that number, we could track or we could see all the foods they purchased 6 months before we met them at the intervention and 6 months after. And they were informed of that when we asked them for their number, for their loyalty card numbers. The ANP, this intervention was in 20 grocery stores of A&P, which is not, which I think has been sold to Stop and Shop and other people now. But the analytics department was very helpful to us. They sent us Excel files of all the pre-intervention and post-intervention data of the foods that we had requested. They did not send us, so they were not, the data would have been huge to go through if we asked for everything that people bought. So for instance, Lysol and pet foods and all of that were not requested. So we gave them a list of foods that we were looking at, and that's what we looked at for the purposes of this intervention. The day of the intervention was not included in the data. for analysis, but of course they sent it to us, so that's what we used to corroborate what we saw in the grocery carts and what they actually bought, because a lot of times people do end up, like, even if you intend to purchase it right before checkout, you take it out and say, oh, I changed my mind. So that's what we used to corroborate whether what we saw was what actually they bought. And so each food item purchase was counted for each participant and coded by participant and by month. So that's how we collected the data. And these were the foods of interest that we had requested data for, because these were the foods that we spoke about in the podcast. So salmon, tuna, shrimp, sardines, all other seafood. So we took out salmon, tuna, shrimp, and sardines. All the other seafoods, there were various amounts of fish and shellfish that people buy, but it was very difficult to keep track of in terms of counting what people were eating. So this is how we coded it. Walnuts, because they are high in ALA, and we do talk about it in our nuts section. Fish oil supplements, we had one of our longest podcast songs were for the fish oil supplements, because there were a lot of contraindications, as well as if you are on certain drugs like blood thinners, you should talk to your doctor before you take EPA and DHA supplements. And the difference between, as Dr. Palmer mentioned earlier in the introduction, a lot of omega-3 supplements are not fish oil. They are, some have plant-based EPA and DHA, but some are just regular ALA. And while one might be consuming them thinking they're improving their omega-3 profile, it is only you're only supplementing your diet with even more ALA and not EPA and DHA. We also looked at fortified foods, including peanut butter, eggs, milk, and mayonnaise, because at that time, these were the four foods that had fortified omega-3s in them. It's not on the slide, but we also looked at whole grain pasta, a lot of whole grain pasta and bread have omega-3s fortified in them. So the descriptive statistics were done for all the demographic characteristics. We also did Wilcoxon sign rank test to assess if food purchases increased from the 6 months before the intervention to the 6 months after the intervention. We also assessed relationship between purchase intentions on the intervention day with actual long-term entry food purchases by doing correlations, as well as non-parametric Kruskal-Wallis ANOVAs to analyze the differences between the changes made and the demographic variables, that is participants' gender, race, and education levels. So the data we're going to present here now is for the 173 complete data sets. The intervention was performed with 240 people in the 20 different grocery stores, but we only had complete data sets for 173. And by complete data sets, I mean they shopped at least once a month in the entire intervention period. So 6 months prior to when we met them and 6 months after when we met them, if they had a complete data set for the 12 months, only then did we include them in this analysis. Most of them were women, as we can see in most studies that are done in the grocery store. Most point of purchase studies, women are the primary food shoppers for their families. A majority of them were white. We did try and do it, as I mentioned, in different counties across New Jersey, and New Jersey is a very diverse state. So we did try to get as many diverse people as possible enrolled in the study, but because this was the podcast was primarily in English, was only in English, we had to limit it to English speakers, which is why we had a primarily white audience. A third of them, a little bit more than a third of them, were high school graduates, and a little less than a third were college graduates. The mean age of the participants was about 50 years, so that's our demographics. What was really exciting to see is that long-term purchases were improved as a result of this. Well, maybe not completely, as a, well, yes, from what we've seen as a result of this intervention. So seafood was where it was a marked increase. We did talk about tuna a lot in our podcast because we mentioned how tuna is a great form of EPA and DHA, as well as canned tuna. It can be very affordable. So we did see, while people did buy tuna before the intervention, we did see a marked increase after the intervention. And as can be seen in many studies, there was a sharp increase in month two, and it did go down, but it didn't go down to our pre-intervention levels. We also saw an increase in salmon, which is another fish we spoke about a lot in our podcast, as well as shrimp. Shrimp is not a great source of EPA and DHA, but it does have some. That's what we mentioned in our podcast. And other seafood combined. So a lot of people, I remember when we were at the grocery store, this mother was planning to buy hamburger patties for her dinner that night or that week, and she decided to buy fish patties instead. And she's like, oh, I thought, you know, if we were going to eat a sandwich anyway, why not include fish, because we don't eat enough fish in our diet. So those were little switches that we saw people make on the day of the intervention, and maybe that's what carried through even after. For fortified foods, it was interesting to see nobody had purchased fortified peanut butter before the intervention, and we saw a few people did buy that after. Fortified eggs, of course, people were people were buying it, people were aware of it before the intervention, and there was an increase in the purchases after as well. And fortified mayonnaise as well, nobody had bought it before, very few people in month four prior to the intervention, but there was like a slight increase. So people were trying it and buying it after the intervention. Here we have the results for the Wilcoxon signed rank test to see, and there were statistically significant increases in number of items purchased in the months pre and post, as well as the number of months that the item was purchased. So just to make it clearer, if I bought salmon in February, March and April, it was counted. I was counted as yes, one for each month, and the number of items that I bought was again added up for every month, aggregated, and that's how we assess pre and post differences. The limitations we were this was limited to people who were interested to learn more about omega-3. So right there, we had a bias where people who maybe had heard about it, maybe somebody had mentioned to them, maybe what had affected it a lot was the doctor also, when we were doing the intervention, he had had a show about omega-3s where he had spoken about, I think, flaxseed and chia seeds. So that had a lot of people curious. It was very popular at that time when we had done this intervention. So a lot of women had mentioned, oh, I heard it at Dr. Oz. I heard it on Dr. Oz's show last week or last month. So there itself, we had a bias where people who were interested in the information had seeked us out. We were also paying people to do this. So there was a bias right there where, you know, we were paying them to do it, as well as we were asking them to show us their shopping cart. So if they wanted to be nice to us, and I had used a lot of, oh, I'm a poor graduate student, please help me card. So if they were, so that could have affected a little bit of the purchases on the day off, which is why we didn't include it in the study. We were also we were also interpreting only food purchasing data. So while they may have purchased it, we don't know what they consumed or who consumed what they bought. It may not have been them, it may not have been their family, maybe they were buying it for a friend or a parent or whoever. So that itself, there is a limitation there. Another very interesting finding of the study was that seniors were was actually really enjoyed having the listening to the podcast. A lot of people, a lot of seniors mentioned, so when we had started because of IRB, I had an age limit of 65, so only shoppers between the age of 18 and 65 were invited to participate. But a lot of seniors showed a lot of interest, and if they did not have any hearing difficulties, we increased the age for that reason. They really enjoyed the podcast. A lady mentioned she felt like she wasn't alone that day. She felt like she had a companion with her. A lot of people inquired, not a lot of, but a few seniors inquired about Deborah. They wanted to meet her. Dr. Palmer is the one who recorded the podcast, and they had been, they were very keen to, they really liked her and they wanted to meet her. So it seems like this is like a teachable moment where if we want to promote healthful behaviors among seniors for other point of purchase studies, podcast may be the way to go, because filled a void, or they didn't feel lonely for those few minutes there. So while this was not the intention of the podcast, it was a very interesting finding that we found.
So basically what we've come down to is, despite the limitations, one of the limitations, as Deepika mentioned, was that people only did it if they wanted to. But quite honestly, in community nutrition, most people only do it if they wanted to. So I do think that podcasts are a really good way to go. People did enjoy them very much, and they did purchase differently because of it. I really think it's a great way for us to do nutrition education. I'm hoping that other people decide that they would like to take this up, because unfortunately, I, having 24 hours in a day, don't have time to make many more. But I think it could be really valuable as a grocery store tour, to do in pieces, to go ahead and do one on different fruits and vegetables, what you can do with them, you know, what you do, that you should eat different colors. I think it'd be great to do one, you know, on dairy products. I think it would be fantastic if we could do more. I think that, I know that from our experience, I think that stores would be interested in it. I think it's something that could be very fundable to do. We had people that were thinking, oh, maybe we could use this to market foods to some extent, and we'd have to be careful if we did that to make sure we're only marketing foods we wanted to. But I do think it's something that could be carried, you know, so that you could even download in the store in different ways and could be encouraged to do so. Of course, we need different studies to see if this would be effective among different populations. As you know from my bio, most of my work is with low-income populations, and I don't know if they'd be as interested. They do have the smartphones in many cases. They could download at home or somewhere where they have internet access. But it doesn't work well when you have children with you. And we found that when we were actually doing the studies. So for people who are shopping with kids, it might not work. But if you can get a bit of time when they don't have kids, I think it's very effective. And I think it could also be used. There are a lot of different interventions that have been done in stores that have various components. They might have shelf talkers, which are those little labels that they put on foods. There have been store interventions with different things that are put on the floor to guide people toward healthier selections. And I think it would be a really nice addition to any larger point of purchase nutrition education that's happening, to be able to offer the podcasts, either in terms of helping people download them onto their own devices, which then they can have it to listen to again and again, or else having some preloaded MP3 players that people could use. We didn't have a lot of hard time getting them back, and I'm sure if you used the antiquated ones that we used, you wouldn't have a hard time getting them back either. But you know, you might have to watch out for them otherwise. But as Deepika said, especially the seniors really enjoyed it. Although, as an aside, they did not know how to operate MP3 players, and we did have to go around the store and periodically check on them and help them out, because they had a hard time getting from one place to another. But like I said before, these are available on an e-extension site. If you Google ABCs of omega-3s and podcasts, you would get to them. And hopefully you can use these in your practice and or create new ones, and that would be fantastic. So at this point, any questions anybody has, we would be happy to answer. Ah, the thanks. I did forget to say this, but we have a lot of people to thank. They're up on the screen right now, and this was funded in part by a multi-state project.
Thank you, Deborah and Topeka, for your research and for sharing your findings. Rachel Paul, if you want to go ahead and moderate the questions to our presenters, we can get the Q&A started.
Absolutely. Sorry, did not realize I was on mute there. All right. So if you have any questions, please type them in the question box, and I'm going to start asking these questions. So the first question is, are the grocery store tour podcasts being used or tested on the My Plate food groups, dietary guidelines for Americans? Are they based on the dietary guidelines?
Yes, they were based on the dietary guidelines in terms of what the guidelines recommends, our recommended intakes. We were not trying to prescribe any particular supplement or any particular food. We were just trying to teach people what are the foods that have them in it naturally and fortified by them, as well as if you're buying and what is the best bang for your buck. So if you are looking to buy a good source of EPA and DHA, but you don't want to spend a lot of money on fresh fish, then, you know, canned tuna is a good option. And we do mention which kinds of tuna have lower mercury than the others, as well as which kinds of, like I mentioned, the supplements, which kinds of supplements you should look for and what recommendations is for that too.
Great. I have two additions to what Deepika said. One is, if the question was asking about if we did it for My Plate recommendations, again, it was limited to just discussing omega-3s. So, you know, we haven't done one on My Plate, only on omega-3s, but we actually used the Dietary Guidelines Scientific Report more than the actual Dietary Guidelines. In terms of the Dietary Guidelines themselves, recommendations for seafood and omega-3 rich foods is pretty sparse. But in the Dietary Guideline Report, they make the same recommendations that the American Heart Association does. And there was actually quite a bit more information in the report, and we used that a lot when we were developing the content.
Great. The next question is this available on iTunes?
It is not available on iTunes. It is available on SoundCloud. That's where we've uploaded it. We should check and see if the Rutgers on iTunes is still valid. I don't know if it is. It was a few years ago. But if you Google it, if you look Google omega-3 podcast on SoundCloud, it's right there.
Yeah, we'll double check that. It was on Rutgers and iTunes, but if it's not, we'll get it put back up because we can. And it is online on the eExtension site.
Great. The next question is, do you have any thoughts about delivering short educational messages over the store's speaker system in a future study?
Crickets. We've actually diverted from this. I don't know if Deepika is going to get back to this or not, but we have competing research projects, and like I said, most of my work is low income, so I haven't been pursuing this beyond the initial project that we put together with the multi-state project.
Okay, great. It looks like those are all of the questions I have.
Mm-hmm. But it's a great study for someone else, so I think you all should take this a step farther if you can.
Definitely. And I have a question. I'm sorry if you mentioned this, but do you have any recommendations for applying this to a more low-income audience, or what kind of modifications would you make?
I don't think I'd make any modifications at all. We spent a lot of time telling people how to best use their money to do this. So, I mean, maybe it's because I normally work with low-income audiences that I was very sensitive to that. But, You know, we tell them, first off, with regards to ALA, and this, again, is in the Dietary Guidelines Scientific Report, Americans consume plenty of ALA as far as we're concerned, because it is in salad dressings, it is in most oils, because it's in any vegetable oil. So we're getting tons of ALA in our diet just normally, and we caution people that where they really, so it is a literally a waste of money to buy foods that are enriched, that tout being rich in omega-3s, when in fact you already have enough ALA in your diet. So the pastas that are omega-3 rich are really a waste of money. And we did cover a lot of fish like tuna fish, which comes in a can, and we made the point that you were able to get omega-3s at a low cost. So I don't really think, other than translating it into Spanish or other languages that we find that a lot of minorities who are low income may be speaking in our communities, and maybe tailoring the food slightly more towards what they would find in locations in which they're shopping, I don't think I'd make a lot of other changes to it.
Great. And there is another question. Was the grocery store chain excited about doing the project? Did they assist with the funding?
They did not assist with the funding, but they were, yes, very excited with the project. They also, the people I had spoken, it took us a while to get into the grocery store. We had a contact through the dietitian who was working there, but they only got excited when they heard our podcast, especially the podcast about the supplements, because the director for who was interviewing me and who was in charge of this project and in charge of okaying it was a pharmacist. I mean, he heard our supplement podcast. He was very excited, and he was very happy that we had all the contraindications with the other drugs on it, etc. So in terms of being excited, they were. We also were giving people $20 gift cards to the grocery store, so that was income to the grocery store, so that was another thing. So I don't think they helped us in funding. We helped them get a little bit more revenue by our project there. Yes, it was a very happy collaboration, and they were very easy to work with in terms of getting data from them. And using the shopper's loyalty card to get the food data was another thing that was very exciting, which I was really happy about, because it was very easy to get. It was they shared it with us on Excel. It was not easy to count and collaborate. Those were many months of my life. But in terms of getting data from them and working with the analytics department, it was very, very painless.
I would really credit Deepika for that. She did an excellent job of convincing them that they should work with us, and not only work with us, but supply us with 1 year's data for every single person that we were tracking. And there were 340 people that we actually did this with, so it was no small feat. But I do think that there would be a lot of interest from grocery stores if some more nutrition educators wanted to pursue this. You know, they're very interested in looking, you know, having things, especially like chains like Wegmans or any upscale chain is always looking for ways to set themselves apart for the higher end consumers anyway. And I think that they would really be interested in trying to say that they have these podcasts. And I think it's worthy of note that the Wall Street Journal research section actually picked this up when we did the pilot and published, had a write-up on it in the Wall Street Journal. And I think that their main thing was because it was an interesting business concept. And I do think that if somebody was interested in doing it, they could probably get funding to do more from grocery stores, especially if they show them this data, because it's a way for them to, again, sell foods that sometimes are a little bit more expensive. We were really excited with the increases in fish intake, because when you look at the literature, you know, people don't eat fish in this country very much, but it was amazing how much more fish they ate after the study. So we know it can be done. And of course, again, I think that's a higher priced food that a lot of stores are interested in selling, you know, outside of the canned tuna fish and things. So I they didn't fund us on this one, but I think the potential's there if somebody wants to take it a step farther.
Great, wonderful. What are your top five foods for low cost, high omega-3s?
What would you say, Divika?
Well, our top five were canned tuna. We did talk about canned tuna a lot. We also mentioned fish is a good source of omega-3s. And I think in our podcast, we did have ideas where you should buy them when they're on in bulk and, you know, freeze them in portions that you can eat them. We did talk about shrimp. Shrimp is a good source of seafood. Is seafood, and it's not a great source of omega-3, but it has some in them. And shrimp is a little bit cheaper than other foods, other seafood that's available. We did talk, and also omega-3 fortified eggs. We found among the fortified foods one of the highest sources of EPA and DHA. For people who don't want to eat fish for reasons like sustainability, etc. And we did talk about the omega-3 supplements, EPA and DHA supplements that are available that were a great source of omega-3s. Do I have five?
Yeah, and although we didn't give a top five, canned salmon would also be on that list for sure.
Right.
And if you would be able to send the SoundCloud link, that would be helpful for participants.
Yes, I will do that. I can send it to you, and then on the follow-up email on Wednesday, they can...
Yeah, definitely. Yep. All right. So due to the success of the project, is there any option for use, for example, other means of communications other than podcasts like leaflets, stickers, posters, and to continue to record the change in informed consumers' behaviors about consuming omega-3s at a larger scale?
You know, I was going to jump in on that one. All of those things have been used in point-of-purchase interventions before, and they're quite frankly not very effective. When you're in the grocery store, the shelf labeling and stickers and that sort of thing, it's already so busy. There are so many products in our grocery stores. They all have, you know, labeling on the front meant to attract people. You look at the shelves and they've got WIC statements next to the unit pricing. It's just so busy, and people are really busy when they're in the store. That's why we were excited about the podcast. It was different, and it actually was extremely effective compared to all of these other ways, which, like I said, have been done in the past, and they really haven't had that big impact. So that's what actually made this exciting. I have not thought of better ways of doing it. You know, even the store announcements, you know, they might work, and I suspect they would, but you wouldn't get nearly as much information because they, of course, don't make long announcements. And we gave people quite a bit of information. We took the time on the podcast to say, now look at this label, turn around, look at the ingredient list. And we gave them instructions, and you can listen to the podcast when you're not in the store, but it's not nearly as much fun. It's way more fun in the store because we actually engaged people. So a lot of those other ways, again, don't. If you have a sticker on something, it's not really engaging you and getting you to think. So I really think this is the best way that I've come up with.
Great, wonderful. All right, looks like that is it for the questions.
Awesome. Thank you, Rachel. And thank you again to our presenters for sharing your findings. Just a reminder that when I close the session today, there will be a short survey, and we do appreciate your feedback on that. Again, watch for that email that'll come out this Wednesday. It'll include the links for today's recording, the handout. I'll also be sure to include a link to the podcast, and as well as your CEU certificate for attending today's webinar. Please be sure to register for a Journal Club 2. That is on healthier children's meals and restaurants, and that will occur next Monday, October 2nd. So that concludes today's session. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.